Today on the Brado and Will Show, we have draft analyst Adam Spinella on the show to talk about the top prospects in the draft, some prospects around 20, and three of Adam's sleepers in this upcoming draft. So stay tuned. Adam's one of the ones when it comes to this draft stuff. So you're going to want to hear what he has to say.
All right, welcome back to the episode of the Brado and Will Show. We're coming to you in the middle of the week. This time we got a very special guest on to talk about some draft stuff. As always, I'm your first host, Will. You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, all that good stuff, at Bias Houston. Over there, we've been doing all of the content aggregation, you know, just keeping up with Houston sports, Houston Rockets basketball. The offseason is going to be really busy, so going to be covering everything Houston Rockets related over there and on the podcast. And I'll pass off to Brad.
As always, you can find me on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, at BradoNBA. All your favorite stats, highlights, anything Rockets related, I got you guys covered. And today's episode, I'm very excited for this one because we had Adam on the show last year, and it was one of my favorite episodes. A lot of great insight on draft prospects from last year. And this year, he's going to do the same thing for us. So if you didn't catch the last one, Adam, can you please tell the listeners where they can find you?
Yeah, guys, it's so good to be back. I had a blast last year, too, so thank you for having me. Anybody out there, please follow me on Twitter at theboxin1_. My YouTube channel has a ton of scouting reports, mock drafts, things like that. That's just my name, Adam Spinella. And then also publish scouting reports in long written form as well on my Substack page, theboxin1.substack.com. And I know a lot of this stuff is going to be relevant to Rockets fans who have a couple first-round picks.
We were going to, you know, we got you on to talk about the draft because, you know, that's kind of your area of expertise. But, you know, we were talking off the camera and you started talking about the Houston Rockets. So I'm like, let's get your thoughts on just kind of how, you know, our rebuild is going so far, and particularly with this season, because, you know, we're talking about it was one of probably the most like tumultuous season the Houston Rockets have probably ever had as far as their franchise goes. So just kind of it's always interesting to hear like what an outsider's perspective is on what our predicament is. So. Just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, had to pump the brakes on our conversation to make sure we hit record in time to get all this stuff down there. Look, as an outsider too, like I cover the draft pretty intimately, and a lot of the players that the Houston Rockets have selected over the last couple of years are guys that I really like. I think the questions when it comes to how this rebuild is going in Houston are kind of twofold. One is, how do the pieces all continue to fit together? Do the players that they have drafted make each other better? And do they make sense for eventually being able to win games in a playoff series? Because at the end of the day, that's what you draft for, right? You want to develop a championship caliber team. You need guys whose skills translate over and work in a playoff series. The other aspect of this, and it's one that I don't have a great answer for. I know different people have different philosophies on this. But when you're starting a rebuild, when you have a ton of draft picks, how much are you valuing just swinging for best player available time and time and time again? And how much do you value trying to find the pieces who are more the fit-based players, the guys who are, so to speak, the glue that holds together some of the top stars that you find? And I think right now, because the fit on court has been a little bit challenging, it's hard to know which of the guys Houston has drafted really turn into those tentpole stars and exactly what they need in terms of finding those glue guys, those fit pieces next to them in order to bring the Rockets to the next level. There's been a lot of chatter off the court, so to speak, with this Houston Rockets team. And I think that not having veterans and adult presences in the locker room is probably a reason for that, that they've gone all in on being super, super young, just in terms of trying to evaluate the talent that they have so they can get a jump start on figuring out who those eventual glue guys are going to be to fit around the so-called tentpole stars like a Jalen Green, a Jabari Smith, in what the franchise envisioned when they drafted them. So I certainly don't think it's panic city in terms of trying to find talent, right? The Rockets have future draft capital. They have good guys and young players on the roster. The question is, when does it start to be more about trying to fit all of the pieces together and put the individuals that you have in the positions where they can most likely succeed?
I think you're 100% right in that assessment. As you said off the camera, it was like these guys are just playing around. It's more so just AAU basketball. And this year, the Rockets are trying to kick it into phase two. So I'm excited. They're going to try to piece it all together, get the young guys that they like, and pair those guys up with some veterans, and hopefully they finally string together some wins. It's been 3 years of this rebuild, so hopefully they take that next step. But we're going to kick it.
I had an additional question for him. Yeah. So I noticed you talked about Jaylen Green and Jabari Smith. Actually, I have two questions, actually. So one, with Jabari Smith, you know, he had the kind of up and down seasons as well. Started out really, really rough. Ended it, you know, on a slight positive uptrend. So I kind of want to get your thoughts on him, you know, because you were someone who, you know, you looked a lot into him as a prospect coming out of Auburn. And you know, now we have a year from the NBA. Kind of what are your thoughts on him after, you know, his rookie season? And then you didn't, and not that it's a problem, but you didn't mention Kevin Porter Jr. and Alperen Şengün. Right. I'm kind of curious, what are your thoughts on those two guys? Those are like two of the most polarizing topics on Rockets Twitter right now, those two guys.
No doubt about it. So with Jabari, and this is not meant to be kind of a pat on the back for me, but I kind of viewed him more as a guy who was really going to be reliant on an offensive system, a scheme, and other players in order to get him shots. He's an elite pick and pop shooting big man who does have the ability to score one-on-one in that elbow or mid-post area, but doesn't generate a lot of attempts at the rim or rim pressure, and I don't think is a really good self-creator. So I had him fourth on my board last year behind Paolo, Chet Holmgren, and Jaden Ivey, just because I didn't see a lot of creation with the ball in his hands. And I think where his rookie season kind of got lost, and we saw quotes through the media with Stephen Silas kind of saying, we don't run a ton of stuff specifically for Jabari. I think he's the type of player you absolutely have to run specific things for, or at least have really intelligent, high IQ guards around him who know how to both get him the ball in positions where he's going to be open and leverage that shooting attention that he has in order to get other people open as well. So I'm still really in on Jabari as a winning team piece. I think that he can be one of those, so to speak, three pillars that organizations have. When you look at the best teams around the NBA, they have three guys or three phases of their identity that are easily identifiable. You know, a lot of times you want that to be three great players. Other times, like the Clippers, it's two great players and a ton of veteran interchangeable depth that their really good coach and Ty Lue can use and maneuver around. And we see that sustain them through a postseason series. I think Jabari can be one of the three pillars in Houston. I do definitely think that Jaylen Green, with his scoring ability, his athleticism, just the flash that he plays with, has to be one of those guys. When it comes to Şengün and Porter, I think that the big reason why I bring up that three-pillar approach is because if you're going to be one of those guys that the entire franchise is built on, you've got to be able to be really reliable night in and night out because you're carrying a lot of weight on your shoulders and you can't be played off the floor on one end, whether it's offense or defense. So I think that leads into where we know we're going to talk about with guys like Porter. Like, I don't always know what we're going to get out of him on a nightly basis or how he fits in best next to a guy like Jaylen Green. If Porter and Green made sense as a backcourt together with a guy like Jabari Smith, I think we would have seen Jabari get a lot more clean, open looks than he already did this season. And then with Şengün, it's just going to come down to the defense. I love his feel. I love what he brings on the offensive end of the floor. But you can't have a tentpole star and a guy that you're building your franchise around long-term who you have questions about whether he can hold up defensively in a postseason series or even be on the floor at the end of games.
Yeah. Yeah, and that leads into my next question almost, because now kicking it into draft, we got to talk about Victor Wembanyama. We all know he's going number one. We all know he's generational, and we've even had people say he's the best prospect of all time. So, Adam, I wanted to ask you, you scout a lot of guys. I'm sure he's probably the best guy you've ever scouted, I had to assume. But do you think he could potentially be the best prospect of all time? And how do you see him fitting to the Rockets end up getting him? How do you see him fitting with Alperen Şengün on the court? Because we have a lot of fans that would want to start Şengün and Victor Wembanyama together. How do you see that pairing working as well?
Yeah, so Victor Wembanyama is the best prospect that I have ever scouted. This is year six of me being able to do this. And you look back at those last several drafts, the first one that I really got intimately involved with was 2018, where we had Luka Doncic and Trae Young, DeAndre Ayton, Marvin Bagley at the top of that draft class, a really talented group. I think that there's no doubt Victor Wembanyama is so much more talented, has a higher level of upside to continue to grow into than any of those guys. I don't necessarily have the all-time context to go back and talk about Kareem and Wilt and even LeBron to some extent. I was in middle school when LeBron was you know, a youngster trying to go through that draft process. But the modern NBA is so much more friendly to bigger guys who have perimeter skills. And coaches are more imaginative and innovative in the ways that you can use somebody who's uniquely talented like that to allow them to have an impact in so many different ways. So I think the comparison point between a Victor and a Wilt or a Kareem is that in the modern NBA, if you can do more, you're not just going to be stuck on the block and told, hey, you're 7'4", go make a bunch of hook shots and make that your bread and butter. And we're seeing that already with how Wembanyama's pro career is playing out. He is a game changer on both ends of the floor. If none of your viewers or listeners have ever seen him before, go back and watch Space Jam, because he's one of those monstar aliens who's on the floor. That's the best comparison that I can ever give for a guy like Wembanyama. And the game changer that he is, because he's 7'4" with an almost 8-foot wingspan, true perimeter skill to knock down and self-create his own jumpers. All of those things that he can do allows him to fit next to almost any type of player imaginable. On the defensive end, he's such a good rim protector with his size that you can probably play him and Şengün next to each other. He's able to play either the 4 or the 5 as he continues to add a little bit of strength to his frame. So you can play him with Jabari Smith. He's fluid enough on the offensive end and can be used in so many different ways that if you have a Jabari, Victor, Şengün front court, yeah, it might work. So I don't fear having to wonder what the roster is going to look like when it has Wembanyama on it in terms of how does he fit with the guys that they currently have, particularly because when you have a monstar who's available on the draft board, like you take him and you just figure out the rest of that later.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that there – well, I take it back. No, I do know that there are some fans out there who would pass on Wemby if they could keep Şengün at the 5. But – that's not me or Brad here. We're definitely going with the best prospect of all time. I want to comment on one thing that you said, and kind of like in response to those people who I think that Wemby would like threaten Shingun's spot on this team. I actually think it kind of does a little bit of the opposite. I feel like you talked about, you know, in your last segment about Shingun's defensive concerns, which I, you know, whether we like it or not, I think they exist to a degree. Whether or not, you know, they'll manifest, you know, 4 years from now we're in the playoffs is a different question. But like as of today, like that is something that we have to kind of, I guess, account for when building this roster around Alperen Şengün. And so I think that when you have a guy like that, right, who has those concerns defensively, you know, to a degree, I think that, you know, a guy like Wembanyama, who has the ability to kind of be like that roamer on defense, you know, come over weak side rim protection, may not be the best, you know, switch defender, but I mean, I would imagine he wouldn't be too terrible at that. Like,
he's okay.
I think that that's the kind of guy who you could pair up with Şengün that would allow Şengün to, even if he's not, you know, quote unquote, the best defender in the world, like if he's able, you know, he's able to cover for Şengün in different, you know, in those assets that Shingun's not the best at. So I actually think it does a little bit of the opposite. Yeah. But you know, it's going on to the next question. We talked about Wemby, I've talked about Scoot, obviously. And then the biggest talk about Scoot is one, everyone thinks that Brandon Miller should go over him now. So I kind of want to know, like, what are your thoughts on the Brandon Miller Scoot discussion? And then everyone's also like really, really, or I wouldn't say everyone, but a lot of people are concerned with his jump shot and questions with that translating to the next level, what that's going to look like. So I'm kind of curious, what are your thoughts on those two things?
Yeah. So correct me if I'm wrong, guys, the Rockets are locked into the top 6 in the draft. Is that right?
Yes.
Yep. Locked into the top 6. So I think in thinking about this draft class in terms of tiers, obviously Victor Wembanyama is the prize at the top. I've called him the best prospect that I've ever scouted. I think being at number 2 this year is akin to being at number 1 in most draft classes. Not necessarily everyone, but most draft classes. And that's because of my belief in Scoot Henderson. I'm not there on the Brandon Miller hype train for having him above Scoot. We can talk about that a little bit later when we dive specifically into Brandon. But Scoot Henderson is, he's a 6'2", maybe 6'3" point guard with 6'9" wingspan, the most massive hands that I've seen since Rajon Rondo, who used to just palm the basketball and do whatever the hell he wanted with it. And he's built like just a muscle. He's so strong when he's on the floor, Scoot Henderson. And to be able to combine those unique physical traits with how productive he's been playing in a professional league in the G League for not just 1 year, but 2 seasons, for the elite feel that he has as a creator for others with the ball in his hands, which I think is something the Rockets could really benefit from, and just the intangible factors. Like it's always a cop-out to talk about the it factor. in the draft and scouting process, because it's so hard to define. It's an intangible that you can't really put your finger on or describe it well, but he just kind of has it. The way that Scoot Henderson wants the moment, rises to the moment, wants all of the pressure on his shoulders is something that every team craves and covets. And that's something, that dependability, that I would really value with the number two overall pick here. There are certainly flaws in his game. He's got to continue to knock down three-point jumpers at a higher rate. He doesn't take them at a high volume right now, but the jump shot mechanics in the mid-range are pristine. They're flawless. It gives you a lot of encouragement. He's going to be able to add that range going back. I don't think he has a ton of defensive versatility, but he's strong. He's got long arms, big hands. Like, he can add that over time. So a lot of the complaints about Scoot Henderson that I see on there are really built around the three-point shot. How many guys have we seen come in the league over the last several years who continue to improve as jump shooters? And if Scoot Henderson's work ethic and it factor are any indication, he's going to become that guy. And then if you don't take him at number two overall in this draft class, you probably look stupid, because that guy with a jump shot is an all-NBA caliber guard.
Adam, I'm going to tell you right now, we're going to clip that and put it on Twitter later.
Oh, I was thinking about it right now. I'm like, I'm going
to do that. People are really talking about Brandon going at three. And I have nothing against Brandon Miller. I think he's a good prospect, and I probably have him as my third best prospect. But when we're talking about Scoot Henderson and Brandon Miller, it's got to be Scoot in the clear at number two. So I'm happy you said that. So that dives into our Brandon Miller question, right? Obviously, his stock rose a lot over the course of the season, but he did have a bad run towards the end of the season. I can rattle off his last four games shooting from the field. He shot 5 for 20 in the SEC game against Texas A&M. Shot 0 for 5 in the first NCAA tournament game, 5 of 17 the next game. Then the loss to San Diego State University, he shot 3 for 19. So he was struggling towards the end. And I don't think necessarily his stock went down, but that was a solidifier for me that you can't be taking him over Scoot Henderson. But what do you think about Brandon Miller overall? And what do you think about his fit next to Jabari Smith if he does go to the Rockets?
Yeah, I think that last point is a pretty interesting one with the fit of Brandon and Jabari. So I have Brandon Miller fourth on my personal board.
I had a feeling you were going to say that.
Yeah.
I'm just going to guess, is it Amen at three?
It's Amen Thompson for me at three. And for many of the same reasons that I had Jaden Ivey above Jabari Smith last year, that I kind of value more of the self-creation. And we can talk about the comparisons between Amen and Ivey a little bit later on. But I think the comparisons between Brandon and Jabari are pretty appropriate as guys who are really, really good shooters and have awesome positional size. Miller's 6'9", really good three-point shooter, smooth stroke. I have never seen at the college basketball level greater in-season improvement than I did from Miller this year in terms of how he attacked the basket, adjusted, and became a really good finisher. He had a rough start over the first 6 or 7 games, but once they got into SEC play, he felt a little bit more comfortable. He was really, really good at attacking the basket. I think that more so than a guy like Jabari, he would be the one to operate with the ball in his hands, be a secondary playmaker. And much like Jabari, he's actually a fantastic isolation scorer in that mid-post elbow area. It's just not something his coach at Alabama really allowed them to do. The analytical style that the Crimson Tide played this year kept them out of mid-post and elbow isolations. So if you go back and you look at Brandon Miller's high school and AAU footage, that was an area he thrived in. Look, I cover this pretty intimately with the draft. Dating back to last August and September, I kept hearing chirps that Brandon Miller was going to be the guy, that there was just something special and different about him. I think that we saw that throughout the year, turning Alabama into the number one team in the country for the majority of that end run of the season. He did not play well down the stretch, and it ended up costing the Crimson Tide because they really needed his offense and production. I have some small athletic concerns in terms of his separation. I think that he's probably best served being a second or third option in the NBA as a result of that. And then there's this dark cloud kind of hanging over everything with Brandon Miller right now of in-season allegations and some unfortunate things that happen around the Alabama program. And that sounds incredibly light to say, unfortunate situations. I don't feel like speaking on it in too much more detail. It does give me just the slightest bit of hesitation about who do you hitch your wagon to. When you're drafting a guy in the top two, top three, top four, you need someone who you know is going to be reliable, not just in the lineup, but continuing to be the face of the franchise and the organization. And for some of those reasons, I just have a little bit more faith in guys like Victor and Scoot because of how they've already proven they can handle themselves as professionals.
You know, so that kind of leads us to the next question, because I was going to ask you how you had some prospects ranked, but you kind of touched on it a little bit with Amon Thompson. Actually, we can pit stop here and talk about the Amon and Ivy comparison, and then we can get into the ranking. So get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, so I don't know if you guys have been watching a lot of the playoffs right now, but we see a lot of cross-matching in the postseason where guards who play with the ball in their hands are no longer guarded by other smaller players. They're guarded by bigger wings. You watch the New York Knicks-Cleveland Cavaliers series, and it's Isaac Okoro who's out there swarming Jalen Brunson at the point of attack. A lot of times in the postseason, paint touches are valuable. You need to find ways to collapse defenses. And some of the most highly valuable and sought-after players are the ones who – they're guys that I call non-screen paint touch guys. They don't need a ball screen in order to get into the lane. I think Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is one of them for Oklahoma City. I think De'Aaron Fox for Sacramento is certainly one with the speed that he operates with. Those guys are just so hard to keep out of the lane. They force defenses to collapse, and then you get wide open shots for all your teammates as a result. Jaden Ivey had that similar level of athleticism last year where he goes from 0 to 100 just like that and puts so much pressure on the rim and on help defenders as a result of that. Amen Thompson from the Overtime Elite program is a similar type of player. He's 6'7" with really unique athletic and defensive tools, but he is a tier one athlete, one of the top two or three as soon as he steps into the NBA. And he does not need a screen in order to get past great defenders, put pressure on the rim. He is probably going to be everybody's favorite YouTube dunk mix about a year or two into the league. Like, he has insane hops, but he couples that with great feel with the basketball in his hands. An unbelievable passer who dissects defenses both proactively and reactively. But because he lives in the lane, he's going to make the right decision 9 times out of 10 because he's forcing defenses to kind of rotate and take him away. The big complaint with Amen right now and why he's starting to fall closer to that 4 spot on many consensus boards, because he has nothing resembling a jump shot right now. Yeah. It's been an ugly process throughout the season. And that's not just out to 3, guys. That's mid-range pull-ups. That's anything outside of 5 feet from the rim. He's been really inefficient at almost a historical level, playing in an Overtime Elite program where he's not going against professionals, grown men, older college guys who are in their 20s and have been doing this for several years. There's that slight worry that a lot of people have.
Yeah, really quick. I went to a few OTE games because I was excited. You know, I'm hearing, okay, we got a top 3, top 4 prospect. I'm going to go check them out. I was shocked. It was one of the games, a few games they lost. They were forcing him to really shoot the 3 ball in the midi, and nothing was falling. Everyone I brought to the game would be shocked. They were like, I thought this guy was going top 3, top 4 in the draft. I was like, I promise, he's still a really good prospect, but the jump shot, he really does have to work on that. That was something that really concerned me when I saw him for the first time.
Yeah, he does need to work on that, but I also think that the underrated aspect of this discussion is how much better spaced an NBA floor is than what you see at the Overtime Elite program or even at the college levels. So I really like the idea of having Jabari Smith as a 4-man next to Amen Thompson, because you know the floor is going to be pretty well spaced for him. That if the lane opens up a little bit more, you're less worried about the mid-range pull-up and those shots around the elbow, because he can just get to the rim around anybody. Like, there are very few guys that I've ever scouted who just have that burst and first step to be able to put pressure on the rim regardless of who's defending them.
Yeah. You know, like I said, I have Amon number 3 on my board too, but that kind of answered the first half of the next question I was going to ask you, was basically, how do you, cause you know, obviously one, we have Wemby, we have Scoot at 2. And now we know you have, Amon at 3 and Miller at 4. So, you know, that's kind of, for the most part, everybody's, in some form or fashion, you know, some people interchange Miller and Amon for 3 and 4, but that's usually the top 4, no matter who you ask, right? How do you rank the next 3 guys, and that being Jarace Walker, Cam Whitmore, and then Ausar Thompson? How do you have those guys panning out?
Yeah, so I do have those 3 currently in that 5, 6, 7 range, and I put a giant asterisk on that because I think that outside of the top 4, no spot is really certain on my board 2 months out from the draft. They're all different types of players, and as you get farther down a draft board, you're thinking more about fit with the great players that you have, right? The envisioned tent poles in Houston of Jalen Green, Jabari Smith, you have to consider the fit with those guys as opposed to Victor and Scoot, or, you know, even a Men and Brandon, who are just such good talents that you take them anyway and you figure out the fit later. Jairus Walker is obviously a guy who played his college ball there in Houston. I'm sure many Rockets fans are familiar with him. I've been watching him play for a long time since, you know, I'm here in the Baltimore area, and this is around where he grew up. So a big fan of the defensive versatility that he brings. I think of him as this, you know, really he's a four who can play the small ball five and blends into any type of offense that you want to run. Decent spot up shooter, good finisher near the basket, can do it both off the bounce and catch and finish. He's good in pick and roll situations. He's a good creator out of the short roll. You can just space him on the floor or run actions through him at the elbow as a passer. Just a really, really versatile offensive piece that blends into any type of system. The real value that he brings is on the defensive end of the floor. Few guys are built like a tank in the way that he is, that can move their feet as gracefully on the perimeter, switch a true one through five on the defensive end of the floor, and are highly in tuned to defensive rotations at a young age. So Walker is a very, very high-end polished role player. And because he has no warts and no flaws in his game on either end of the floor, he's going to be a great fit in a lot of different systems. I think Houston with the Rockets is the one challenge to that, is because they already have so many good young players who don't have a ton of defensive versatility in those spots already, with guys like Şengün and Jabari and
you know, Walker. Do you think he could fit next to those three guys? I don't really see the fit. I know you don't draft for fit, but like I just don't see how you play Şengün, Jabari, and Jairus together.
I don't think you can. Yeah, I don't know if you can. I think it would take a really creative offensive coach to be able to make that work. And you probably need a lot more switchability on your one and two spots to be able to just be massive across the front line, so you're discouraging other teams from getting pressure on the rim. I like Jairus a lot. I just don't know if Houston's going to be the right fit for him. You know, Cam Whitmore is a guy, speaking of Baltimore, I coached against twice last year because he played in the league that I coach in. So I'm very familiar with Cam Whitmore throwing down yams on some of my players. He's a freak athlete, like 6'7", super young, 18 years old at the time of the draft, which does matter in some of these occasions, particularly when you have the patience that the Houston Rockets do for continuing to take younger players in who are talented and kind of give them some reps right off the bat. Whitmore also missed part of two seasons in high school due to injury, due to COVID, a lot of different factors. So in terms of basketball experience, he's super young, which to me makes what he's been able to accomplish at the high major level in college playing for Villanova all the more impressive. He has some habits that he needs to drastically improve. He's not a very good ball mover. It sticks to his hands. He's a slow decision maker who wants to catch and survey and try to go one-on-one at guys. And I think he needs to be a lot more consistent in terms of his help defensive habits. Those are things that can be taught and can be improved to some degree. I don't think I ever see him being a 5-assist-a-game guy, but he can become a better passer to function within an offense. But man, would I fear the first step and the rim pressure of Jalen Green and Cam Whitmore together, because those are two guys who both physically and athletically over the rim can put a lot of strain on opposing defenses. So I do like Whitmore a lot. I think it'd be a solid fit in Houston, but not necessarily the most ideal one, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that definitely makes sense. Asar related. I like Asar's game. I will say, again, I saw him in person. I think his jumper is a little more, you know, fluid than Amen's. So what do you think about Asar Thompson? Where do you have him on your board? You still put him between 4 and 7?
I've fluctuated a lot with Asar. He's at 7 for me right now. He was outside of the top 10 for a large portion of the season, and then we saw a little bit of that shooting progression start to come on, and I'm buying in a little bit more and thinking that the tweaks mechanically that he's made are going to serve him well in the long term. Think of him almost like as an Andre Iguodala type of guy, where he's not playing with the ball in his hands for a ton of possessions per game, but he still has those point guard qualities where the best value that he brings is on the defensive end of the floor, with versatility, with wanting to take on those top defensive assignments while still being an excellent help defender. Iguodala, just like Assor, kind of struggled to find consistency with his jump shot. He could make enough to stay on the floor, but was never the most feared option if he's just spacing out on the perimeter. But he's a winning piece and a winning basketball player. And that's kind of where I've started to land with Assor. So many people want to look at him and Amend side by side just because they're twins and think that their games or their ceilings should be together. I get asked all the time, why aren't they neck and neck or next to each other on your board? Well, they're not the same player. You're not getting the same guy when you have Marcus or Markieff Morris either. So just because they're twins doesn't mean you're getting carbon copies of the same thing. Amen is much more athletic and bursty. I think Assor is still a really good athlete, but doesn't have that elite burst separation the way that his twin does. That said, he makes up for it by being farther along as a jump shooter and a much more risk-averse type of player. He doesn't gamble for steals in the same way that Amen does. He's more reliable as a help defender. There are just a lot of great things that he brings to the table that I really, really like about Assor being that reliable piece. So of all of these guys in that 5, 6, 7 range, I think Assor would be the best team fit here for Houston. I think he unlocks a lot of things as a connective passer, that top perimeter defender that the Rockets so desperately crave right now, and has the positional size to really play the three, so to speak, that you can put him next to Porter and Green. You can put him next to Green. You can play him at so many different spots. I think he'd be an excellent fit in Houston. Either of the Thompson twins would.
I appreciate that insight. We had to ask about all those guys. Hopefully the Rockets get I'm sure the Rockets will get one of those seven players. So we had to get your insight on that, of course. But going into our next question, you know, the Rockets, they just got that 20th pick from the Clippers. They traded Eric Gordon, the Bucks pick for it. So around that range, right, again, we don't know. A lot can change from now until draft time. So in your mind, some guys around the 20th range, you know, that could potentially fall to the Rockets. I'm thinking like an enforcer, like a Derek Lively. A lot of Rockets fans have been talking about him. Or who are some other guys you think that could, that could fit in this Rockets system?
I love the Lively fit there in Houston. I think having a great rim protector to hold down that back line unlocks so much for what you can do offensively with the 1 through 4 spots. And I think it's kind of a, you know, it's a strategy and a roster building mold that we've seen work time and time again. You get a stretch four like Jabari, you get a good rim protector, a pick and roll, like screen and dive to the basket guy like Lively, because that's literally all that he can do on the offensive end right now is go jump really high because you're 7'1 with a 7-foot wingspan and just throw down lobs all day. So that unlocks that role. We call it roll gravity, right? Guys who are a great threat to finish off the pick and roll, they suck in, help defenders and force defenses to collapse. I think there's real value in that. But what Lively does on the defensive end is the big reason why he's valued as a potential lottery pick. So being at 20, I think Lively's probably going to play himself above that range, if I'm honest with you. I think that he showed so much growth over the final 8 weeks of the season. But if he's available by any means at 20, or if the Rockets can move up a couple spots to get him, I think he fits in well with everybody other than Wemby, because there's a lot of positional overlap there. I think he'd be an awesome piece to try to grab in this draft.
That kind of leads us to like maybe the next question. This isn't somebody who necessarily the Rockets have a pick. So I mean, it depends on how your board shakes out. But I don't think we'll be in the range to draft these guys. But this is something that, you know, some of the Twitter listeners wanted us to ask you on the show. Yeah. How do you have Cason Wallace and Anthony Black ranked on your board? And, you know, where do you guys have those guys going?
Ooh, great questions. I'm a huge Cason Wallace guy. I just kind of believe in his offense a little bit more than a guy like Anthony Black. Both are high field playmakers. Both are intense, intense defenders. I think Wallace is more polished than Black is right now. But Anthony, obviously 6'7 or 6'8, has some more size as opposed to a guy who's closer to 6'3 or 6'4 like Cason Wallace. I'm a firm believer in the Kentucky effect. And I don't know if you guys are familiar with this term in draft spaces, but guards are typically undervalued coming out of the University of Kentucky and end up outperforming their draft position, particularly
on our team.
their offensive role over the last several years. I mean, you look at Tyler Hero, Jamal Murray, Devin Booker, Emmanuel Quickley, at Tyrese Maxey, De'Aaron Fox to some extent now, and the way that he's been able to turn it on. Like, if you draft a guard who has played for John Calipari at Kentucky, you're not likely to miss. And that means a lot to me. I'm a huge fan of Cason Wallace. I have him 8th on my board right now. I think Anthony Black is right around 11 or 12.
Okay, that's interesting because I know a lot of people have those guys kind of in the same range, and like I've seen Kaysom Wallace on some boards go like 12 through 14. I've seen him go as high as like you said 7-8. So it's all interesting to see where people have him. But like I share your sentiment. I'm really high on him as well. And then just like any sleepers you got like towards the back of the draft, or just anybody who you want to talk about that we haven't talked about yet that you feel like you know deserves some love on the show.
Sure. I'll give you a sleeper actually for the 20th pick, which okay. Sounds kind of strange, but a guy who I think is going to continue to rise up draft boards and be in play and viable, who would be a good fit in Houston. It's Sidy Sissoko, who plays for the G League Ignite right now. So with the Ignite, they've got Scoot Henderson, who has been kind of the crown jewel for them for the last year and a half to 2 years. Leonard Miller, another really toolsy athlete, maybe 6'10", 6'11", with some guard skills to handle the basketball. He's been highly touted and followed. But quietly, I think Sissoko has been one of the best team players that they have at a young age. 18 years old, playing in a professional league and being wildly successful. Quietly improved as a jump shooter throughout the season, which is going to give him long-term viability to play off ball. In Europe, before he came over to the Ignite program, he was like a 6'5 point guard. Now he's almost a 6'7 power wing slasher who can hit those spot-up shots. And another thing that I love, not just those Kentucky guards, but anybody who played a guard at a younger level and then hit a giant growth spurt, the way that they see and feel the game, the skills that they have to be able to handle the basketball, it translates and it follows them as they add that size. So I'm a big fan of what Sissoko can do as a role player on the offensive end because he has rounded out his game so well. But he's got this like Draymond Greenish, Dylan Brooks, like MF-er, I'm going to get into you type of mentality. And he is super, super physical. I totally agree. It's something that the Rockets need. I think it fits positionally because he can kind of play the three and the four. The way that he shoots as a spot up guy now gives me a lot of hope that he can play just spacing in the corners on offense if that's what you need out of him. Like, I really like Sissoko, and I would expect him to be somebody that continues to climb as we get in these final 2 months of the pre-draft process.
Yeah. Can you spell that for me real quick? I'm going to go do some research on it.
Yeah. So it's Sidy, S-I-D-Y, and then the last S-I-D-Y. Name, Sissoko, C-I-S-S-O-K-O.
Got you. Yeah, I need to go do my homework
on that. And I'll do a shameless plug there. I've got a scouting report video and written report on
check out
already. That. So go ahead over there and check those out. I think the last section of the video where it talks about kind of his chippiness, so to speak, is also one to see. It rubs a lot of people the wrong way sometimes. He gets involved in a lot of extracurriculars, let's say. But that's a guy I'd rather
right now.
I'd want to have a guy like him on my team, right? An enforcer, a guy who I just would not want to play against. That's usually the type of guy that I'm drawn to and want on my team.
We appreciate that insight and the insight on this draft. I mean, that's going to do it for this draft. And last year when we had you on, we had to ask you about the 2023 draft because we were all excited about Wimby and Scoot coming in. So for this upcoming draft, if you've done any homework on it at all, is this something, you know, a draft class that we should be excited about? You know, we got Bronny and we got some other guys in there. How do you feel about that class?
I'm not as optimistic on 2024 simply because I don't think we've seen those top names emerge yet. And usually as we get closer to the draft right around now, that's a disappointing thing because about a year, maybe a year and a few months out from a draft, you want to know who those tentpole stars are. They should have already emerged and established themselves. I don't think that that's happened yet. It's probably not a great draft to have a top four or five pick. That said, I think there's going to be a lot of value in a fairly deep first round, and that's due in part to the way that college basketball has changed with NIL legislation and money, where really good players who are on the fence about declaring for a draft end up staying in college a year longer. They get better there, and you can find more polished upperclassmen still in the first round. So I think it's a deep draft, but I don't think it's one with a ton of star power at the top.
All right, well, we'll be looking forward to it. The Rockets don't have a first-round pick that year, so we're not going to be at the bottom. unless they suck and they just luckily get a top-four pick because that's going to OKC, if not. But hopefully we don't have to worry about that again. So, Adam, again, we just want to thank you for coming on. Second year in a row, blessed to have you on. We really enjoyed it. And if people didn't hear you the first time, we're going to have you plug yourself again.
Yeah, this is so much fun every year, guys. So make sure that we do this again for the 2024 draft. And I'll make sure I do my research and read up on the 25 guys for that one as well. Guys, you can find me on Twitter at @theboxandone_, on YouTube, my name Adam Spinella, or my Substack page, theboxandone.substack.com. Got mock drafts, individual scouting reports, real deep draft philosophy discussions that I try to go into to explain why or how I view things the way that I do. We're 2 months out from the draft. I'll probably sleep in July, but this is the best time of the year. So really appreciate you guys having me on. And I am kind of a closeted Rockets fan. So I'm glad to be on here talking about one of the teams I do enjoy.
Oh, we appreciate you being a Rockets fan. You don't got to be closeted. You can come out and let people know. But yeah, as always, guys, you can find me on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, all that good stuff. Brad NBA, you know where to find me. I just want to say really quickly about Adam. He already plugged himself, but I got to do some plugging for him too, because he really does have one of the best scouting pages out there on YouTube. If you don't know somebody, go watch a little 10-minute tutorial on Adam's YouTube page, and you feel like you've been watching it for 5 years. So definitely check out Adam's page on YouTube. I appreciate you again for coming on.
As always, thank you for coming on. Like I said, we appreciate your insight on the draft. I think everyone's going to learn a lot from this podcast, and obviously we're going to have you on next year to educate us on the 2025 draft. But as always, you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Bias Houston. Like I said, Adam, we appreciate you for coming on and giving us your time today. We'll be back next week, guys. Appreciate this.